nearing a deal to help victims of the Bangladesh factory collapse. From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for David Brancaccio, with the global perspective on business and economics. There are reports this morning that a deal is close to compensate the victims of the Rana Plaza collapse in Bangladesh, which killed more than 1,100 garment industry workers last April. Some companies that made clothes there are in talks with the government and labor groups to create a fund to pay victims and their relatives. The New York Times says it could be as much as $40 million. We're joined now from Dhaka by the BBC's Mahfouz Sadiq. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
When you talk to people in Dhaka, do they think having big companies pay into a fund will actually change the garment industry?
There is definitely a sense that because these clothes are intended for Western consumers and bought by global retailers, there is responsibility from their part as well. As far as I've spoken to workers from the Rana Plaza, they all feel that a fund should be put together to compensate those who were affected.
There were some 24 companies whose clothes were made at Rana Plaza, yet we've only got so far 4 who would pay into this fund. That shows some real divide over who would pay for responsibility here.
There does exist a tension between various players in this agreement that's being talked about. Many of the retailers have, while agreed that they will help, they're not ready in many cases, it seems, to be in a binding agreement, because once such an agreement comes into place, you will have a legal framework by which other victims can claim compensation. For North American retailers, they have been very reluctant to join a major global safety alliance because North American retailers fear that they might get into a legal tangle over compensation claims. There seems to be, as you mentioned, still a lot of tension as to who and how much retailers should contribute.
Mahfouz Sadiq of the BBC joining me from Dhaka. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If you are one of those people who still strings cranberries together to decorate a Christmas tree, you're in luck. There is a cranberry surplus. You can thank Canada for that. It grows hundreds of millions of them every year. As Marketplace's David Gura reports, the cranberry industry wants some U.S. government help.
The Congressional Cranberry Caucus, yes, such a thing exists, asked the Department of Agriculture to add cranberries to what's called the USDA Foods Available List.
Foods that are available for schools to purchase as a part of their commodity feeding programs.
That's Scott Soares, head of the Cranberry Marketing Committee. These are the kinds of fruits and vegetables the federal government buys for school meals programs. Park Wilde teaches nutrition at Tufts.
When the National School Lunch Program started in 1946, it was very explicitly half about helping children and half about commodity disposal.
These days, Wilde says, that balance has shifted. Now it's more about nutrition goals. The trouble is cranberries typically require some added sugar to make them palatable. The Ag Department has approved dried cranberries and cranberry sauce, but that's it. The cranberry industry needs to offload more than that, though. It has 750,000 barrels to get rid of. That's 75 million pounds. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
I'm David Brancaccio. Marketplace is not some engulf and devour corporation. It is a nonprofit, and it is listener-supported. So to keep our coverage strong and relevant, what you could do is make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will really help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by the end of this year.
Wine lovers have something to look forward to tonight, besides wine. Christmas stockings stuffed with aerators, vacuum pumps, and fancy corkscrews. Wine gadgets are now a multi-million dollar industry. But do any of them actually work? Shruti Penamaneni has more.
That's the sound of the toilet refilling.
Paul Soms eases a bottle of chilled Chardonnay out from his toilet tank.
I've actually got a thermometer in here, so you can see it's 48 degrees.
Soms, who's been selling wine for more than 20 years, says he prefers this toilet tank to a $100 electronic wine chiller.
That's really not good for the wine. It changes the composition of the wine, and in many cases, wines are served too cold.
In fact, wine connoisseurs say a lot of the popular wine gadgets don't actually make for better tasting wine. TJ Provenzano is manager of Brooklyn Enology, and I asked him about wine aerators, the trendiest of wine accessories.
I don't find them to be really helpful.
But you do sell one.
Yes, absolutely. Because people want it. You know, it gives them something to send somebody who's into wine.
So every Christmas, Provenzano stocks his store with accessories like aerators, wine aroma training kits.
Here we have decanter brushes.
More Americans are drinking wine, especially at home. By the end of this year, we will have polished off 713 million gallons of wine. Jackie Strum works at Wine Enthusiast. You might have heard of the magazine, but its parent company also sells wine accessories, like this electric blue corkscrew.
This one is really fun. It makes a little whirring noise when you open it up.
Wine Enthusiast makes more than $100 million selling these wine gadgets every year, not just to fancy people. Its biggest customers are Costco and Target. This is all good news for people who sell wine accessories. Not so good for the people getting them as gifts, like TJ Provenzano.
I received last year a ceramic dog that holds a bottle of wine.
He also got a lot of corkscrews and wine charms. Provenzano finally cut his family off. No more wine accessory gifts. His holiday gift suggestion? A bottle of wine, preferably local. In New York, I'm Shruti Pinnamaneni for Marketplace.
If you like Marketplace, well, then follow us on Twitter. We're at MarketplaceAPM. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.